I did not know and understand what was happening to me as I entered into what I refer to as the fight after the fight. I had done all this training in my Marine Corps career. I had done all this training as a civilian cop, as an athlete, you know, the critical thinking, a competitive athlete, the critical thinking kicks in. I had done all that to prepare to survive on the street. What I had not prepared for, and what I'm hoping that your viewers and listeners are really going to hear me say today, is I was not preparing for the fight after the fight. I was prepared for the fight on that street, that night, that day. Gun battle, I'm there as much as you can be plugged into that. I was plugged in. I was ready mentally. I had been shot like that a million times over because I prepared myself mentally.
Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, 2023 at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center. It's going to be a great experience. 5 career-changing days, some of the most profound speakers in the industry. Guest speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Navy SEAL American war hero Jason Redman, Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Mark Lamb, and Sheriff Wayne Ivey. You'll also spend time with all of our Street Cop instructors at this event Monday through Friday. We'll have a great lineup of courses in addition to our great speakers. It will be a week that you will not forget. You'll be thankful you came. You don't want to miss out. Check out streetcop.com on how to register. If you're going to use the room code, make sure you book it from Sunday through Friday. That's what the code's good for, and it's about half the price of the regular rate. But those rooms are running out, so make sure you sign up now. We'll see you there.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. I don't even want to call this episode 3 of 3. I'm just going to call it episode 3 because it's going to go on forever.
And another episode with Anne. And another.
Anne Carrizales, everybody's favorite reoccurring character here on the Street Cop Podcast. And if you haven't heard the podcast before, they're very good. We got a lot of people who really like when you're on. Her and I have a blossoming friendship behind the scenes as we exchange texts and book recommendations. And yes. I'm looking forward to meeting you at the Street Cop Conference whenever you can make it. Pumped. And if you come to Jersey, you better reach out to us and let us know as well. But
of course.
Anne was shot in the line of duty. What year was that again?
Well, I was shot in 2013. My second shooting was 2013.
Mm-hmm. I maybe just give everybody who hasn't listened to previous episodes the 30-second explanation of who you are, what happened to you, what you're doing now, maybe even a minute and a half, whatever you want to do.
My name is Anne Carrizales. I live in Texas, and I am a mama of 2 kids and a best friend, a sister, an aunt, a daughter. But among other all those things, I'm also a cop here in the beautiful state of Texas. My career has spanned over almost 2 decades of civilian and military police service. And I've had some really incredible experiences, but along the line, some of those more standout incidents that I went through was a shooting in 2012 and a shooting in 2013. I'm probably most known in the law enforcement profession from being involved in shooting number 2, where I was ambushed and shot multiple times by MS-13 gang members. That journey led me to give birth to the Fight After the Fight series, in which I chronicle, you know, the 2 officer-involved shootings, as well as the emotional battle and struggle in the aftermath of those incidents. So that's what I think we're going to talk about today. The fight after the fight. What is that?
You know, for the first time ever, I recently visited somebody who was, and I don't really want to make it public. I don't do things so I can use them to my benefit. So people say, oh, he's a good guy, right? I'm a good guy because people know I'm a good guy, right? People... What I like the best is I know the people around this country who actually have met me, know me, or have done something with them will say good things about me behind my back. Now, people who have met me are going to say whatever they feel like saying, whether they like me or not. Without knowing me, they'll cast judgment. And that's understandable. That's something you have to accept when you're stepping up and doing a podcast like this or going to open your mouth and try to help. A lot of people are in bad places mentally, and they don't want to acknowledge that themselves and work on themselves. They'd rather cast that negativity, get it off their shoulders and throw it onto somebody else. The problem is I'm Teflon. I don't care what you try to do to me. I have been so groomed mentally to understand what's going on that you kind of can't affect me. You're like a little bit both, right? that calloused brain, a calloused mind. But mm-hmm. what I'm saying is recently I visited somebody who was shot. And I don't want to go into too many details. You know, it's hard to really understand what people go through when they're shot and how devastating, how painful, how mentally draining it is for a human being who's normal be put in such a horrific situation and then to watch them feeling almost helpless. And I just can't stop thinking about it. I have a whole new understanding of what somebody looks like right after they were shot. We often meet a lot of you guys and girls a year, 2 years, 4 months, 8 months mm-hmm. after you're shot. People right. can't really understand what it is like to feel that pain, to feel that mental anguish. And I saw it firsthand this weekend, and I'm glad that I saw it because I can understand it more now. And hopefully I can help with that. What do you say to that?
Well, I think there's a lot of different facets to it. When you ask somebody who's been through something like that, and not just, you know, in law enforcement, but, you know, our military vets or, you know, really anybody, you know, because there are civilians who are victims of violent crimes and violent crime can look a lot different than just bullets touching you, right? Rape, child molestation, you know, like there's lots of trauma out there that can affect people. But when we're speaking specifically about officers who've been involved in something like this, you talk about like to see them and to see, you know, what they feel, what's that like, you know, what do you feel? What does that feel like? There's so many facets to it. It has so many faces. And I think that's what can be very tricky about, you know, what I refer to as the fight after the fight is that you could be in the midst of one facet of it and of one part of what that's going to look like for you. And then you'll think that, oh, okay, just as you're adjusting to feeling that, to experiencing that part of it, you're going to find yourself in another part of it. And then it's confusing because you're like, well, wait a minute, I was used to kind of it feeling this way. Now it feels this way. And then so on and so forth. There's just so many different parts of it. There's the physical part of it, right? Oh my gosh, the physical part and the shock of it, physically hurting and the injuries and what people have to go through, you know, with surgeries, some people lose body parts, you know, like myself, and then have to go through surgeries for reconstruction. So there's the physical trauma of it. And that's stressful and challenging. And then there's the financial burden that comes with being involved in something like that, which a lot of times is just not really, it's not talked about, right? So people don't understand. People think, you know, well, it's amazing to me how many, you know, civilians and law enforcement officers themselves do not know how this affects getting injured on duty, getting shot. Let's use that as an example. Getting shot on duty will affect your money. So then there's that aspect of it. And then, you know, there's the stress of that incident on the department and on your peers, the stress amongst your peers and your department leaders as a whole, as a team, because you are a family, you're essentially a family, a team, whatever agency you work for. It is stressful in that respect. It affects the agency. It affects your partners. So nobody prepared me for that part of it. So now, you know, throw that part on there, and then you throw that part on there, and you throw that part. And then aside from that, you know, you got physical, you got money, you got physical stress, money stress, professional work stress. You know, when are you coming back? What's workman's comp going to cover? What do you mean workers' comp is saying this is not job related? And you know, I was shot on duty. How is that not job related? You know, and so there's the battle of that professional. Then there's the battle of the stressor of going through it from the perspective of your family members and how it affects them, your husbands, your wives, your children, your pets, because people don't realize it. I mean, it even affects down to the fur baby as an element, as a player in your family, right? So then there's that. The stress of the family is super great because oftentimes it's difficult to understand it from their perspective because a lot of us don't see it from that perspective. So you have the spouse that's going to be feeling a certain set of stressors, and then you have your children who will experience something completely different. So you're trying to keep up with that. And then of course your own, you know, emotional battles on top of that to include, you know, maybe moral battles within yourself or spiritual battles is what I've done, is what I've been involved in. Am I feeling conflicted spiritually? You know, whether it's based on your religion or however you believe spiritually. So there's those internal battles. And then, of course, the battles of post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress injury. And that's an explanation that would be quick and at a glance. So I guess, what do you think about that?
I think that I heard you really downplay the physical pain that people go through. And, you know, it's not uncommon for us to be in a classroom setting and somebody who had been shot in the line of duty or maybe even injured in service in Iraq or Afghanistan. And, you know, I'll say to them, why don't you tell the class what it felt like? Just because I think cops have this romantic idea of, I'm going to have this story. It'd be really cool if I could tell people that I got shot. The story is not worth it. Now, why I say this is because a lot of people in this audience who are not training appropriately for tactics, marksmanship, mm-hmm. I'm going to take a lot of what street cop training doesn't do and put it on the forefront for situations like this. We have tactic training, no question about it. It's great. We're not the only show in town. There are a significant amount of companies that teach on police tactics of, you know, traffic stops, building clearing, marksmanship, stresses during shootout. There are things that I think that we do better than anybody else. And I will tell you that case law and probably some of our proactive stuff is, I will sit here and challenge anybody who thinks they can do case law better than we do. I don't think you can. If anything, you might be able to match us, but you'd be hard pressed to find a company that can cover that. Just because I speak to some companies, I see some of the stuff they put out when people send it to me, and I'm like, yeah, I know, they're trying. I'm not sitting here slinging mud at them. I'm saying, we're not the best at everything. We're the best at what we're at the best at right now. But what I want people to recognize is, I had a guy comment in the group the other day, oh, 200, not everybody has $299 for a class. Not everybody has $249 for a class. First of all, bullshit. I call bullshit on that completely. If you wanted something bad enough, you thought it was valuable enough, you'll figure out how to get $249,000. Right. We're talking about $250 in a day where you can go to the grocery store and in five bags fill or three bags full hit $250 mark. So don't give me your bullshit. People don't understand the significant damage you're asking for on the other side of things if you fail to get this training. If you fail to at least get the mental toughness required to endure something if this does happen to you. So I don't say these things because I need to fucking put 24s on my car. I say these things because I know there's a recognition that people need to be prepared for the what ifs by practicing and training for the what ifs. You can't just subscribe to this idea that it's not going to happen to me. Because you could talk to a lot of people who subscribe to that and weren't ready for it and didn't know what to do when the time came. And I got to tell you, there is nothing romantic about being shot. No. Can you please emphasize that? Talk about the real fucking pain, and tell them about the real pain.
Let me tell you this, Dennis. You know, if just giving you a glimpse, and that was a lot for a glimpse, I think. There's a lot to think about because, you know, there's people listening right now or watching and listening and saying, yeah, wow, I didn't even think about it that way or whatever. But yeah, you might have heard it sound like it was downplayed on the physical front. And that's certainly not because it wasn't tough. I'm not trying to downplay the physical aspect of it. What I will tell you is that was the easiest part of it. The physical pain was the easiest part of it. I took gunshots to the face, right square to the face, the chest. I lost half of a breast. I walked around deformed like that for a while before they went in and reconstructed my chest and my face to take all the scar tissue. This was painful shit. Indescribable. I say this when I'm presenting, like I'd rather shit 10 more kids than go through that type of pain. It was very painful to take the shots as the bullets entering your body and you're feeling it. The shock of feeling that bullet tear through your body, it burns. For some people who feel the pain of it, you know, on impact, because not everybody does, you know, with adrenaline and all of that stuff pumping. Sometimes, you know, some people don't really feel it right away. But most people do, and I did, and it's painful. It's extremely painful. The burning of it is intense, very intense. It burns to a level that I've never felt before. It burned me just really bad. You're talking about, tell us how this shit really is. That sucked. That was painful. I'd rather shit you 10 more kids than feel that again. But what I will tell you is that the emotional pain that I felt, I was not prepared for. I was not prepared for that. This incident affected me in so many ways. It affected my physical health, the things I was feeling physically. It affected my gut health. It affected my sex life. It affected my mental state. I became depressed and anxious. I began having nightmares about horrible things that happened to me, even in my past outside of law enforcement, which was, that in of itself was extremely confusing, because I was having nightmares and night terrors about things that I had long since put in the rearview mirror. Nobody talked about this kind of stuff. You don't talk about this. So how on earth could anybody be prepared? But to have somebody tell you the truth of what that looks like is just super valuable. I did not know and understand what was happening to me as I entered into what I refer to as the fight after the fight. I had done all this training in my Marine Corps career. I had done all this training as a civilian cop, as an athlete, you know, the critical thinking, a competitive athlete, the critical thinking kicks in. I had done all that to prepare to survive on the street. What I had not prepared for, and what I'm hoping that your viewers and listeners are really going to hear me say today, is I was not preparing for the fight after the fight. I was prepared for the fight on that street, that night, that day. Gun battle. I'm there as much as you can be plugged into that. I was plugged in. I was ready mentally. I had been shot like that a million times over because I prepared myself mentally. I was prepared for that fight. I was not prepared for the fight that came after that fight. This is my problem with the whole slogan and ultimate career goal of being, we all go home. We all go home. We all go home. We know this. But it's not enough, people. It's not enough. And if what you could stand to go through in the fight after the fight with that round three opponent is what I refer to it, if anybody's ever heard me speak and heard the fight after the fight, they know round one was the first shooting. Round two is the second shooting. Round three is the fight after the fight. The battle that kicked my ass up one side, down the other. And you know, Dennis, I'm not one of those people that quits very easily. I'm a fighter through and through. I'm a fight champion, former fight champion, for a reason, because there's no quit in me. I'm coming for you. But in this respect, I wasn't ready, man. And for that reason, I got my ass hemmed up bad. I was in the corner taking a pounding from the strongest, most vicious, most relentless opponent I had ever faced in my entire life. And that was post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress injury. And yet still, even with the suicide numbers, the way they look for us, it is not a focal point for training, because we just, for some reason, like you said earlier, is it because it won't happen here? It won't happen to us. It won't happen to me. It won't happen to our agency. I don't know what it is. I know we're making improvements, but it's still not a focal point for training, and we need to fix that. So I have an opinion on what one of the first things that we need to do is to kind of start making it a focal point of training. And my opinion is that we need to look at this issue, the issue of being ill prepared for the fight after the fight, not possessing those those emotional tactics, not having that is costing us big time. So if we look at that as an officer safety issue, perhaps it'll get the attention more of people in the command position to kind of make changes to policy and training and things like that. This incident I wasn't prepared for how it was going to affect me, how it affected my children, how it affected my marriage, my friendships, my relationship with myself. I didn't trust myself anymore. And I didn't even recognize myself. I was literally a shell of the woman that I was before this happened.
I want to just jump in. I have some thoughts. You see me writing like a madman over here. Mm-hmm. And Ann and Den, when they get together, always come up with some really profound things. We've said it in the past, we're cut from the same cloth. Very, mm-hmm. very big, deep thinkers. I'm often this meadow of philosophy at times, where I just am looking around the world and seeing things people don't see. Before I get to some of my first thoughts, you said that training We need to train on this stuff. We need to train on this stuff. Now, I want to address a few things. Number one, we know that. We know here at this company and my life's purpose is I can make things better by making better things. With that being said, people have to understand there's a difference between training and checking a box. In this profession, command likes to check boxes for liability-based training. Well, we did it. They got it. Somebody came, they hit power DMS, they clicked the slide right, they took it, she signed off, said she was there, it was 111 slides. We actually have her right there. She was sitting for 43 minutes. She did it, she should have known better. And though that's no longer good. So when you say command has to get on board, command has to get on board in the sense that they have to recognize that they are not going to be able to resolve most of these solutions in-house. They're going to have to find the funding to get with companies out there that specialize in the training they need. And again, sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but there's some factual data behind this. I don't go around my house and try to fix my fucking roof. So why does an agency or command staff think that they can do all those things in-house? And they can't. So they've got to, when I need floors, I call a guy who does my floors and he comes in and does the floors. I needed banisters in the house. The guy came in, he did a beautiful job and I have beautiful banisters now. Problem solved. So when we talk about making a change, think about this. This might blow your mind a little bit. Even this podcast moves the needle a little bit. Every time you open your mouth and take some time out of your day, whether it's in person or on a podcast like this, or just one-on-one to somebody, you are making change. We all want this profound light switch that tomorrow it's all fixed. But unfortunately, that's not how it works. No. I wish in my heart, every cop, 700,000 of them in the country, would be at my class tomorrow. I actually can't figure out why they're not at our classes tomorrow. But that's not something I can control. What I can control is how I show up, how often I show up, and why we show up. And I just want to commend you for, like, just acknowledge it. You're showing up. You know, you're here. We are changing. We are having this. We are planting the seeds for the future. People listen to this fucking podcast. We have 400 and God knows how many thousand subscribers we have, and you're a favorite recurring guest. There's a reason why, because you're delivering value. You meant something to somebody the last two times you showed up, and you'll mean something to somebody this time as well.
Right. And it's, I'm a wholeheartedly believe that it's not me. It's not Ann Carrizales that makes it a favorite. It's the message. It's the experience. It's the fact that someone's saying it. You know, you said something a second ago. You said, you know, you don't understand why command staff thinks they can do it themselves, all of it in-house. You know, you say, you know, I don't do floors. I don't do, you know, this, that, and the other. I call people in. Well, I mean, it's isn't that interesting? Because that's what we do. We do shit that we should be calling people in to do, because that's how we're wired. We are called to scenes to handle shit that maybe we're not always even trained to handle, but we are expected to bring and restore order to situations. It's what we do. It's how we're wired. So I have a complete and total understanding of why command staff does that outside of, you know, maybe budgetary restraints or trying to, you know, budget. We'll just say budget as a blanket or whatever other reasons, but it's how they're wired. We show up, we handle it all. We are the counselor. We are the marriage counselor. We are the trauma specialist. We are the law enforcers. We are the predators when we have to be predators and hunt the bad guys down because they have, you know, raped a two-year-old girl. We are the guardians. We are all of these things. We're the, you know, I just came from a community event. We did, you know, coffee with a cop, and I'm back there in the coffee place, you know, making coffees today, you know, and so I'm even making coffees, you know, but that's what they need from us. And then that's also what gets us in trouble, because we aren't equipped to deal with the emotional traumas that happen as a result of the shit we see that we can't unsee. But look, here we are trying to figure out a way to cope with that, whether it's at the bottom of a bottle, whether it's acting out and recklessly sexually, you know, being reckless and engaging in reckless sexual behavior or reckless behavior of all kinds, stealing, you know, drugs, you know, gambling, you name it, you know, sex addiction, you name it, because we're not equipped to deal with it. But we do this all the time. We go to choir practice, we sit down with our brothers and sisters, and we shoot the shit, we have drinks, maybe it comes up a little here or there, but once it starts to get a little too bajiggity feeling, we back up off of it, and we start telling more stories, and we laugh, and we cope using humor. We aren't therapists. I always tell the ladies this, ladies, if you have got something brewing, if you have got something brewing downstairs, you don't go to a podiatrist. You go to your gynecologist and you get that shit checked out, because you know these are the doctors that are in place for that specific thing. If you're having trouble with your heart, you don't go to the gynecologist. We go to a special doctor for that. But for some reason, we can't get out of our own damn way and go to the doctor that can help us learn about how this opponent fights, how this opponent attacks you. You know, I was successful in my fight career. Why was I successful? Because I was dedicated and disciplined to the training. I was always working on my craft, and I was always learning from the trainer. I had to be coachable. I had to be trainable. But in this area, we aren't seeking that type of training at the levels that we need to. Yes, trainings, you know, trainings for mental resiliency and wellness trainings and conferences that, you know, things like that. Those are effective. But you have to do more. You have to do more than that. You have to go out and find your own trainer, right? I had a trainer. I had a trainer that taught me, that helped me win championships. I didn't do that shit by myself. I had a trainer. I had a cut man. I had sparring partners. It's a village. It's a training camp. And we need to take that approach, I believe, here. As a fighter, when I got in the ring, Dennis, if I'm fighting you, I'm looking at you from the cross of ring and I'm thinking to myself, oh, you poor bastard, you lost 8 weeks ago. I've been beating your ass for 8 freaking weeks here. You have no idea what's coming for you. You poor thing, you shouldn't even showed up. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at you from across the ring, and that's what's going through my mind. Now that I've been through and have battled through round 3 with that opponent, that's how I look at my struggles when I still have them, because I still have them sometimes. I still feel anxiety sometimes. Sometimes I will still have a physiological response to something specific, like a certain noise or a certain sound, smell, you know, environment. And now that's how I look at this opponent. Like, I know what you're doing. I see you. I got a counterpunch combination for your ass. Come on with it. Come on with it. But before, I was not like that. It was not like that because I didn't have the information. I didn't have myself a trainer, a special doctor that specialized in ensuring that mentally I was trained, emotionally I could develop the type of resilience that we need to make it through this career in one piece. Every battle's not a gun battle. That's for damn sure.
You ain't kidding. You know, sometimes I feel like, holy shit, I have so much work to do, right? I don't mean that sense of like coming to the office to... There's so much work to be done. And I think that for a lifetime, I'll be dedicating it to saying to myself at the end of this, like, and I get my fucking ass kicked. And I just keep reading the quote from Theodore Roosevelt. Have you ever read The Man in the Arena?
No.
Oh my God. I just gave you a gift.
Oh, you did?
As a matter of fact, I'm going to have you read The Man in the Arena. If you could pull it up on your phone in about 5 minutes, we're going to do it, because I think it's okay. Worth people to hear. But I want to talk about a few things that I took notes on as you were talking.
Okay.
One is when administrations or police departments complain about budgetary restraints. This is a very interesting excuse that everybody tries to rely on. But I'm going to tell you this. Most agencies outside of the federal government can find a way to make a way. And what I mean by that is, if it meant that much, you would have it. It means so much to us when somebody we love may be fighting some kind of battle and needs some funding, or somebody passes away and they need some funding. It's amazing how quickly we are able to act or react in a situation like that when it's paramount and important. So if it's important enough, we're going to find it, right? It's just so interesting. So people say, oh, we don't have the budget for it. Well, have you even reached out to outside of the realm of what you're used to try to find the budget for it? Did anybody get boots on the ground, do some door knocking, maybe some calls around to some businesses or other people in town, or do some little advertising? Hey, we're looking for funding for this for your police department. I would bet that you'd get more support than you'd actually think you'd ever would. You might find somebody in your town who, or not even there anymore, but maybe grew up to be a billionaire, but had a real true place in their heart because some of their high school friends were cops in the town and would say, you know what, I'm going to donate you guys $100,000. I think you guys should have this. There are organizations out there doing great things, but I wanted to address that, and I want to talk about something you said earlier, which was after this happened, all these things from your past, all this trauma started to erupt. What people don't realize is everybody has a significant amount of trauma, and trauma is like a volcano. And what you did was you took an atom bomb and you dropped it into the volcano. Yeah. And what happened was it sunk all the way to the bottom of the volcano. It exploded and all the lava came out. All this trauma started to erupt in nightmares. So people have to understand something. The human brain is very interesting. There's a science behind it, and nobody is ever going to be able to escape, as much as they want to believe they can, the vulnerability of having a brain and what that means. I thought I was one of those people. I was like, fuck, dude. Nothing rocks me, right? Things bother me. Nothing's going to rock me to my core. And Ann, I've been rocked to my core at 40 fucking years old. Yeah. Never in my life was ever rocked to my core until 40 years old. And it's not the typical things you think it would be. It's not like, oh, they're doing this to me. Oh, this organization said this about me. Oh, you see in this group that they're talking shit about Streak Up. Like, that shit don't fucking bother me. It's when the battle began on inside my dungeon. You know,
That's precisely what I mean. When I say every battle's not a gun battle, that's precisely what I mean.
It wasn't even, honestly, I'm going to just leave it as vague as possible. It was like your castle is your safe space, right? So whatever you want to picture what that is. And then all of a sudden your safe space, your castle was invaded. And you're like, holy shit, we're not ready for this. What the fuck? How did they get through the fucking walls? What are we doing?
I liken it to, you know, my platoon, when I went to Marine Corps boot camp in Parris Island, South Carolina, when I went there for Marine Corps boot camp, we were the first platoon recruits to utilize real live grenades in training. So I thought, I'm athletic, I can chuck a softball, I'm going to be just fine, I'm going to do this great. And I choked. I don't know what happened. I grabbed that thing, I pulled the key, and I went to throw it in, and it went boom. right there in the fucking freaking wall, and that behind that wall we were behind. I'll never forget. I've never seen anyone move faster than the woman that was in one of the drill instructors or whoever was out there, teaching us, the trainers, to grab that thing and chuck it over there as quickly as she did. I'm telling you right now, y'all didn't clear the wall. I did not clear the wall. And that's what you're describing right now is exactly what I think about. It's like throwing a grenade at the enemy and it lands in your own foxhole. That's what it feels like. And then you blow your shit right on up. Literally. That's what I'm thinking of when I'm hearing you talking. And that's precisely what I mean by every battle's not a gun battle. It's different for everyone. Everyone has something that will not. I say this every time I present. Everybody in here has had something happen in their lives that has knocked them on their ass, that has left them feeling like, holy shit, you know, oh Lord God, you know, there are people who up until that point may not even have been very religious or believed in God much, but they're crying out to him. You know, what's that saying? My son always refers to it. There are no atheists on the battlefield. I forgot who he said that. And it's kind of like that. People, you're crying. Something that has hurt you to your core, rocked to your core, and left you feeling like that. Everybody's had that. And we all stand to go through that. So all the more reason to kind of get ready and be prepared. For me, it was about learning the opponent. I took the same approach that I took in the fight game. Oh, okay. This chick is beating my ass. I have got to come up with a strategy so that I can change my plan. What I'm doing is not working. My plan's not working. You know, like Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Well, you know, he actually didn't really say that. That's not his actual quote. That's not what he said to Larry Merchant when he did that after interview, but it was paraphrased and packaged as a Mike Tyson quote. So we'll just leave it like that. But yeah, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And then when they do get punched in the face, it's like, what happens when you physically get punched in the face? The eyeballs swell up. You get hit right, the eyeballs water, they swell up. It's like a, it's a shock. It's a shock. I always tell women this. I always tell women this when I train women. It's like, if you ain't never been punched in your motherfucking forehead, girl, you better go get some sparring in, because you do not want that happen the first time in your life when you're out there on the streets with these criminals who are going to try to kill you or kick your ass at the very least. You do not want to experience that the first time when you're out on the streets, because when you need to be ready, ain't no time to get ready. You know what I mean? That couldn't be more applicable for the fight after the fight. It's very difficult. It's not impossible, but it is extremely difficult from somebody who's been extremely successful in changing strategy in the midst of a fight. I mean, a real literal fight, changing strategy, switching things up in order to win. I was good at that. I was effective. I didn't become ranked number one in the country for no damn reason. And I couldn't do it. It's extremely difficult when you're in that type of darkness, when you're under that type of an emotional attack. And the brain, like you said, the brain is working what feels like against you. It's very difficult to try to get ready to come up with a counterpunch combination or a different strategy to win that fight if you don't have the right people in your corner. It's hard.
You know, sometimes it's very interesting. I don't know why my fingertips will take me to certain places with my phone. In the morning, typically, I am trying to build my brain. It just makes me for a better day. So I want to be thoughtful when I talk. I want to hear thoughtful conversations and be able to convey that back. It really stirs up some of the best of Dennis Bonino. Today, being a very interesting morning, of course, to begin with, and being me is interesting in some sense because of what we have built, what kind of attention we have, and who's got me in their crosshairs. And I happen to come across Brene Brown. You ever listen to any of her stuff?
Yes.
It was exactly what I needed to hear today. And it reminded me, there's literally, and if you came here right now, we moved into a bigger office. We need about 1,200 more square feet. So in from about 3,200 to 4,400, 4,500 square feet to build a podcast studio, we moved around the corner. Now, when we moved around the corner, we did it like we were trying to escape tyranny,
like you're,
right?
Like you're literally breaking your lease.
yeah. Like not even that. We're not paying rent. We're out of here, right? So we moved everything over here and kind of just put stuff in closets in a way. And we had to get right back to work because we didn't want to spend time. It's a business prioritization of what you're supposed to do with your time, right? I could sit here and fucking paint and hang shit all day, but what has that done for the law enforcement community? So when we have a day where I'm not feeling sharp or I can't offer anything, maybe that's the day I'll hang stuff or we'll contract somebody. But there's only one sign that was hung up here. One. I kid you not, if I could walk you around with the camera right now, and it is the man in the arena sign. And today I heard it again. I haven't heard it in a long time. And it's been in front of my face the whole time. And I'm going to read it to you. And hopefully I read it appropriately. And I want people to hear this as well. Because when somebody like Anne decides that she's going to open her mouth and address these topics and issues, she opens herself up, makes herself vulnerable, and an easy target for anybody who criticized the work that she's trying to do. And I'm sure you felt it. I'm sure you've said people, right? There's nothing you can do. And that's something you've got to understand and shake hands with God of, you're going to do this. Are you ready? Are you ready to have people just sit here and criticize the work that you do, albeit coming from your heart and your soul, from a good purpose, from a good place? It doesn't matter. Can you handle that? And that's a real truth. So I want to read this excerpt to everybody. And I probably brought it up on some of the more early podcasts. And the excerpt, if you've never read it, is one of those profound I've ever read. It might move somebody. So I want to read it. And it's from Theodore Roosevelt. It's called The Man in the Arena. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, but there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions? Who spends himself in a worthy cause? Who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement? And who, at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly? So that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. I'll take this shit any day of the week over laying in a fucking bed when I'm 91 saying I knew I could have done something, but I didn't because I was scared. And I'm telling you, I show up every day. I haven't even tried to make sense of it anymore in a lot of years with the intention of making this world a better place. And I know that I can do a lot of that by fixing a lot of things in this profession because we're so integrated with the world and the outcomes of the world. And a lot of things really can do great stuff.
Right.
And and you suffer this great criticism. People will throw tomatoes and popcorn and they boo you, right? I think I talked about it in the last podcast. I had another group in here. Did you ever hear about the thing with the Albert Einstein excerpt from when he taught a class? Did I ever tell you this one?
No.
So Albert Einstein's a real story. He's teaching a class of his students at the collegiate level. And he walks in one morning and puts on the board, 9 times 1 is 9. 9 times 2 is 18. 9 times 3 is 27. And this continues on until he gets to 9 times 10. And he puts 9 times 10 is 91. And they all start to laugh. And he said, "What are you laughing at?" They said, That doesn't make any sense. You 9 times 10 is not 91. It's 90. You made a mistake." And he said, "You know, it's interesting. 9 times I got this right. Not one person made a peep. Till I got to the one mistake, that's when I heard from all of you." Yeah. Could you imagine? Right? And that's how we live our lives. And people
I don't have to imagine. I feel it so many times. You'll get it right and you won't hear shit. And you get something wrong and you're right, you're going to hear it. And I can definitely relate to that. That's, I like that. That's interesting. My thought process on it is, but you know, I'm not afraid to get it wrong. If I get it wrong and they point it out, that means they're listening. That means they heard about the other 8 times before this 9th time or the 9 times before the 10th time. They heard it. That's the thing. You know, some people might have sat through the fight after the fight, 3 rounds I'm counting, and or any of the other 2 presentations, and maybe didn't get, feel like they got shit out of it. And, but they can't unhear it. They heard it. And I was right. And sometimes it takes them years, maybe then until they're going through their own fight after the fight before they realize, well, shit, like I told you, one of the last times we spoke, it didn't apply to them at that time. But then they realize she was right. I think the beauty of it is I don't do this so that I can hear people tell me that I'm getting it right. I don't. And when they tell me if they believe I'm getting something wrong, then that just solidifies with me that they're hearing me. I don't mind it either way, but I can relate to it because I certainly do feel it either way, right or wrong or indifferent. I feel that. I do what I do because I know how I felt in round 3. I know how alone I felt, how isolated I felt, how crazy I felt. I thought I was losing my mind and I was terrified because I had no control over a lot of things that was happening to me. I didn't have the understanding or the knowledge that this was a brain issue. I do that because I don't want anyone ever feeling like they're alone in it or like it's just them or that they are going crazy or not knowing what's going on with them. I want you to know you can win. You can beat this opponent because I have kicked its ass before. And if Dennis is supposed to fight this round 3 opponent and Dennis knows he's got to get ready for it or he stands to face this opponent and you know you have the potential to face this opponent and Ann Carrizales has fought this motherfucker and got her ass beat up one side and down the other by this opponent and turned right around and came back like some Rocky Balboa shit and put it on this opponent and came out on top winning. Don't you want to spar with me? Don't you want to learn? What did it hit? What did it feel like? Just like you talked about earlier, Dennis, tell us what that feels like. Wouldn't you want to pick the brain of those who have fought this opponent before you and been successful? I would. That's how I won championships. And I want people never to feel like they had been sent to war with a butter knife. That's how I felt, like I was sent to war with the butter knife. You knew. All of us know this, but we don't tell the baby cubs coming in. We don't tell the little rookies coming in. We may mention it. You'll be married more than once and get ready. This shit is going to fuck you up. It's going to change you. And we leave it at that. Maybe because we don't know. But I'm telling you what, once you know, you know. And after you know and you get a handle on it, I feel like it is your duty to share that with your fellow partner to the left and to the right, because we're all out there trying to stay alive. Shit. We're all just trying to make it.
I want to remind people that as you find yourself sometimes lost in the marsh in the night, in the days that it's foggy, in the days that it's tough, is that often we lose sight of people who this is important to, right? We're forgetting about the 50% of people that are showing up waiting for you to say the next thing that you're going to say to help fix their next issue, the people that rely and depend on you for making their lives better. So I want to give that advice to people of like,
okay,
turn the noise off on that side and start turning up the volume on the side of people who are in your corner. And, you know, and as you know, we started a little earlier today because I have an engagement at 3:30 that I must be at. It's super mm-hmm. important. I want to finish with this. I wrote this earlier and it said that bones, when they break, when they get mended, they come back stronger. And then I thought about turbulent rides on top of that. I would imagine in my head, an amateur pilot, a guy who's the first time taking controls of a plane, going up and experiencing turbulence for the first time, right? Panicking. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And he looks over at the veteran pilot who hasn't batted an eye, skipped a beat, and smiles over, knowing that doesn't matter how turbulent it is, this plane's not going to go down. The little guy, the new guy, thinks, oh, it's over, we're done. But the veteran guy says, no, this is part of flying. You're going to experience turbulence. What do you say to that? What does that make you think about? Do you feel like going through an experience like this prepares you for anything like that in the future, knowing you've conquered this, you can conquer it again?
1,000,000%. 1,000,000%. I know that life will throw me punches moving forward. I know that. It did, even after this. I went through a horrible divorce. When I say horrible, not that we were fighting amongst ourselves so much. It was horrible. It was just, it broke my heart. So I went through that. That was painful. That was hard, but I survived it. Life will throw punches. You know, here's what I know. I'll tell you what I know. There's a lot of shit I don't know, Dennis. You started talking about math and 9 times 1 is 9 and 9 times 2 is, and I got immediately nervous because I don't math, right? So there's a lot of things I don't know, but I'll tell you what I know. I know me. And I know that I might go out there tomorrow and get in a patrol car and somebody might put a bullet in me. But I know myself and I know how I think when things go bad in life, when things could go bad out there on the street. And I think to myself, you know, you might hurt me. You might knock me down. You might put me on my ass, life. You might put a whooping on me, round 3 opponent. You might put me down, but motherfucker, you can't kill me. You can't break me. You will not break me. That's what I know. And what I think about are the hundreds of people, 10 people, 20 people, thousands of people. I don't know. Whoever's going to watch this, what I think about is them. What I think about is the people on the other side of this camera, the other women that are sitting there, whoever felt that they weren't fucking enough. They weren't enough. They weren't maybe good enough for this job. They weren't strong enough physically or big enough and imposing enough. Maybe their command presence was lacking. There's a ton of problems, you know, and insecurities that we have as women. There's tons of insecurities that we have as men. But what I know is this: when you hit the turbulence in the plane and your booty hole puckers and your stomach falls into your butt and it feels nervous and you turn to look over and there's not a senior pilot there next to you. Think of me, this face right here. And what I would say to you is, you're good. You're good. It doesn't have to kill you. It doesn't have to break you. There's a way to win this. And I can show you. So nobody watching or listening to this can ever say they don't have somebody that will show them the way. I didn't have that at the time. And if I did, I did not know it. So I want them to know that. Because sometimes just knowing it's there is half the battle. It's the holidays. People really start to struggle around this time of year. It brings out the best in people. It brings out the worst. But what I want you to know is when you feel that feeling in your gut, that nervousness that that pilot Dennis just talked about, the baby pilot turns to look to the senior pilot because he's like, well, shit, are we going to fall out of the fucking sky? No. Remember, I'm telling you, no. You got this. You're not alone. The strongest of warriors have been there. And the strongest of warriors make it out. And I'm here. And so for that, you'll never be alone. Never. We just got to get comfortable with talking about it more and normalizing talking about it more. I guess what I'm trying to say is show up for yourself the same way that you show up for the people that you serve out there in the community. If you can do that, and showing up for yourself can look a lot of different ways, but if you can do that, if you can show up for yourself, you got a dog in this fight. My life changed. My fight strategy changed the moment I decided to show up for myself. But you got somebody. Even if I'm all the way over here in Texas, you got somebody.
You are a gift to the world, and you know it, and you probably don't like to acknowledge it. Everything happens for a reason. Life happens for us, not to us.
Yeah.
And those are some things you've got to think about. And Anne has embraced that.
You got to.
You even got me emotional. So.
Oh, fuck, you don't got emotion. Come on.
Yeah, no. You got me.
You're not supposed to have emotion.
you got me emotional. I mean, I'm, you know, people are clear as who I am. And this comes out in the podcast a lot. Means a lot. So
yeah,
we're ending. We're going to do it again.
All right. We'll do it again.
These have become my favorite. There is something very, very special that happens when Anne and Den get together.
Yeah.
And I want to keep sharing that with the world. And
yeah,
believe me, you are making a hell of an impact. And I have to get the fuck out of here or I'm going to get in trouble.
Hey, so. Be safe. Y'all have a happy, happy holiday. And make sure that if you have anybody that wants to try to reach me, that needs an ear, that needs a little nudge, a little push, that you just find me on social media, type in Officer Anne Marie Carrizales. You'll know the spelling of my name through the description of this podcast. Find me, track me down. You're cops. You know how to find people. And I got you.
Thanks, Anne. I gotta go. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.